Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Outgrow's Marketer of the Month. I'm your host, Dr. Saksham Sharda. I'm the creative director at Outgrow.co. And for this month, we're going to interview Jay McBain, who is the chief analyst of channeled partnerships and ecosystems at Canalys. Thanks for joining us, Jay.
Well, thanks for having me.
So Jay, we're going to start with a rapid fire round just to break the ice. You get three passes. In case you don't want to answer the question, you can just say pass, but try to keep your answers to one word or one sentence only, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, so the first one. If you had to write a book tomorrow, what would you write about?
Ecosystems.
What would be the title of the book about you if your worst enemy wrote it?
Wow. Probably something about narcissism.
What movie do you enjoy quoting the most?
With my family, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, in my work life, probably Top Gun.
What is your ideal way to spend a birthday?
Just had my 50th birthday. Traveling the world.
Okay. At what age do you want to retire?
12 years from now, 62.
Mm-hmm. How long does it take you to get ready in the mornings?
About 12 seconds.
Most embarrassing moment of your life?
Work-wise is when I shared information on my screen on an airplane.
Okay, we can take that. Favorite color?
Baby blue.
What time of day are you most inspired?
Night. Late night.
Fill in the blank. An upcoming marketing trend is blank.
Marketing in, with, and through marketplaces.
The city in which the best kiss of your life happened?
Raleigh, North Carolina.
Pick one, Mark Zuckerberg or Jack Dorsey?
Pass.
How do you relax?
Motorcycle.
How many cups of coffee do you drink per day?
Two.
A habit of yours that you hate?
Procrastination.
The most valuable skill you've learned in life?
Begin with the end in mind.
Mm-hmm. And the last question is your favorite Netflix show?
Ever?
Yeah. Or is that literally the name of the show?
No. Trying to think of what was on Netflix. Queen's Gambit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that was the end of the rapid fire round. I think you had just one pass, so you win a car. Just kidding. You don't win anything.
I'm not choosing Facebook over Twitter.
Yes. A lot of people passed that one, actually. So that was a good pass. So moving on to the long form questions. The first one is, so you've mentioned how difficult it is for the channel chief to manage more than 90 operational and strategic components under time constraints. So which skill sets, in your opinion, are necessary to advance in this particular role?
Yeah, so the channel chief, which has been synonymous with transactional or resell channels, mm-hmm. Actually has close to 100 elements in the program. We now have chief partner officers. There's over a dozen of them that have been hired at big companies. And they even have a bigger challenge under time constraints, which is that they're running not only the transactional channel, but they're running tech alliances and strategic alliances and business alliances, influence channels before that point of sale, transaction assist channels during the initial subscription, and then long-term retention channels. So I'd say 90 things have probably turned into about 200 things that you're managing concurrently. And I create the tech stack, which allows these leaders to automate many of these and kind of remove them from day-to-day human activities.
And so which skill sets do you think would be necessary to advance in this particular role?
Yeah, so this has actually been studied. The Harvard Business Review calls this role, from a skill perspective, more of a general management or a CEO type. where you may have marketing, channel marketing and channel sales and operations and finance and other things reporting into you. So skills wise, it's not a see a bear, shoot a bear type of role. It's managing multiple different elements in parallel. And many of the elements that you're managing actually don't report directly to you. There are third-party companies that obviously are out for themselves as well. So very tricky in terms of leadership.
And one of the quickest ways to drive growth, I guess, is through partnerships. And the best way to support this process is by developing a channel software stack. So what additional measures do you think are crucial to accelerating this growth even further?
Well, every customer of every marketer that's out there, whether it's a prospect or a current customer, currently has 7 partners on average that they trust. And the average channel marketer, for example, may know 1 or less of those 7. So one of the ways to further expand business as well as get new opportunities is find more of these partners that are influential and super connected within your potential customers. So it's a franchise model where you can sell, you know, hamburgers or donuts or coffee. But if you end up building a restaurant on every street corner in every town around the world, you sell a lot more. And so partnerships are that same level of scale that you can get from working with others.
And so how does one go about finding these particular partners that you're talking about?
Yeah, so I spend a lot of time on a community approach. In every market, there's basically a top-down approach, which the top partners, they might be system integrators like an Accenture, Deloitte. It could be big resellers like a CDW. There's 20 different kinds of partners by business model. And the top ones are pretty easy to find because many of them are fortune-sized companies. The bottom up, though, is based on what they read, where they go, and who they follow. So I track 14 different spheres of influence. And these spheres are things like, you know, magazines and events and associations, analysts like myself and podcasts like this. So there's 14 different ways. And if you can capture them at the point or the watering hole that they're at and understand the other influencers at that watering hole, you can actually build a very powerful, inexpensive model of covering your world of end customers as well as potential partners.
And are there any tools or platforms online where you can find these waterholes where everyone's gathering and it's easy to find out where they are?
Yeah, so the channel landscape has, the one that I publish has 223 companies who many of them help on the recruitment side, whether it's network effects or whether it's kind of finding these watering holes. There's also basic marketing tactics using things like Google to go find what people are reading and following the breadcrumbs, you know, following their social accounts and following other things to go find out where they go, what they read or listen to, and who they follow. So there's algorithms in place where I think every channel marketer, every marketer in the future is going to have to get better at understanding all the logos, understanding all these spheres of influence and all the places in there. If you're in the tech industry, and you're recruiting channel partners, for example, there's 59 magazines, there's 142 social groups, there's 100 podcasts, there are 24 associations. So I could walk down all 14 spheres of influence. You could create a map for your company, for your type of buyer and the partners that wrap around them, those 7 partners. And it's actually, once you get to the law of a few, the people that are driving, sitting on the board of these associations, speaking in Las Vegas on stage, recording these types of podcasts on the front cover of these magazines. If you actually go through and run an algorithm and give people points, you should know who the 100 most super connected influential people are in your target buyer. And just by definition, many of them are going to be partners and potential partners that that sit around that. So in the post cookie world, this is what we're now facing. Your customer will go through 28 moments on average before making vendor selection. You have no way through MarTech or AdTech anymore to go buy that data. So now you have to become a partner leader, no matter where you are in marketing, to go figure out these 28 owners and to get closer to them and share data with them and attribute what they do and build in technology that can do this in an automated fashion.
So would you then say that collaborating with other members of your ecosystem is the only way to quickly introduce agile solutions to your target audience? What advice do you have for choosing the best partners to co-market or co-sell with?
Well, it's not the only way. You can go run a Super Bowl ad for $5 million. I mean, you can put on a radio ad, you can put up a billboard. I mean, there's all kinds of marketing tactics. The most successful ones, though, are, again, double-clicking. If we want to talk about marketing before the point of vendor selection, there's 28 moments. And as a marketing team, direct marketing team, you're doing your best to collect maybe three or four of those moments. Hopefully they come to our website. Hopefully they read our ebook. Maybe they listen to our podcast. You know, maybe they talk to one of our salespeople. They request a demo. I mean, that would be fantastic. But as we all know, that doesn't happen often enough. And if you looked at your entire market TAM, every single potential customer in the world, they have seven partners that they trust on average, and they go through 28 moments before making vendor selection, either in your favor or more often, you lose a deal without ever knowing there was a deal. So the more of these people and places and things that you can connect to, and more of these 28 moments you can get in through from a partnership perspective, you're going to have more MQLs. You're going to have more chances to service, you know, a wider array of customers. And by the way, with technology, you want to do the data sharing at that point or at that moment where even if that click doesn't come through you, you can get the agreement with that partner that you can see that click in real time.
And what are your thoughts on, you know, the ultimate goal? So do you agree that subscriptions are only useful for low margin B2C? In order to implement a subscription business model successfully, what kind of significant value proposition must businesses make sure to offer to the customer?
Yeah, so that thinking might have been around 5 years ago. But you can talk to trillion-dollar companies today like Microsoft and AWS and Google and soon-to-be trillion-dollar companies like Salesforce and ServiceNow and Workday and Marketo and NetSuite and HubSpot and others. Subscriptions are everything and consumption models are becoming everything. You can talk to big fortune-sized companies like Dell and Cisco and IBM and Lenovo and HP who cover, you know, trillion-dollar plus. They've committed 100% of their revenue to subscription consumption models. So low margin, high margin, it's everywhere. Actually, Accenture did a piece of research where they asked CEOs in every sized company, every industry, all 27 industries, and every country of the world, and 76% of CEOs think their current business model will be unrecognizable in 5 years. Ecosystems were the number one reason why. But underneath that, subscription consumption models, usage and value-based models. In the SaaS world, it's product-led growth. And you've got direct-to-consumer making a big run because that directly connects to these subscription consumption models. And then obviously the growth of marketplaces, which grew more in 3 months during the pandemic than the last 10 years combined. One third of the US economy is now marketplaces. So this is now going, 76% of companies are moving towards this subscription model. So it's not about margin. It's about moving for a valuation perspective and moving your clients, moving your partners, and moving everything into an as-a-service model.
And can you think of any particular area where the subscription model is not the future or it's in decline?
No. I mean, if you look at car companies from last week, you know, the CEO of Ford is out obviously converting every car they have to electric. So are their 62 competitors. And guess what? After electric, you have self-driving. After self-driving, you have transportation as a service. Everything you buy, the companies behind it are thinking about those things as subscriptions. And if you talk value, your toothbrush manufacturer is trying to get you a new toothbrush for 99 cents a month for the rest of your life. You know, Dollar Shave Club is trying to get you a shaver every month for the rest of your life. The fact of the matter is up and down consumer through B2B to C through B2B, every company is thinking about this model. Carrier, who makes air conditioners, is thinking about cool air as a service. So instead of a $7,000 air conditioner and furnace and other types of things, wherever you happen to live, I am Canadian, so it used to be heat, not air conditioning. But now I'm in Florida, so it's all about air conditioning. The fact of the matter is, instead of $7,000 to replace the box and paying somebody in a white van, you know, hundreds of dollars to come fix it each time, I'm going to start paying $49 a month for the rest of my life to keep my house at 72 degrees, no matter where I live in the world. And that's as a service. I don't own the stuff. I don't want to own the stuff. I don't want to know anything about it. The maintenance, the replacements, all the other stuff I want handled. And I don't ever want to think about cold or heat again in my house. That's as a service. Every industry is moving this direction.
And how do you think this is going to be affected by the upcoming recession? Because the industry is currently experiencing its first fully challenging economic environment in more than a decade of exponential MarTech growth. Yeah. So what suggestions do you have for early stage MarTech businesses looking for a willing acquisitor or readjusting their business models to become more profitable?
Yeah, we've had 14 years of very strong growth. And, you know, everything is cyclical. It has been for 100 years. So most people and most boards and private equity firms and venture capital firms have been holding on for kind of this moment, knowing that it was coming. You saw many, many companies in MarTech and AdTech overhire and over raise money. And now you're seeing some layoffs and you're seeing some repositioning. But the fact of the matter is the business side of it is strong. Whenever there is a downturn, we're going through several macroeconomic problems, not just inflation and supply chain and wars in Europe. So when these things happen, companies tend to turn to automation and they turn to efficiencies. And the tech industry, you know, at least for the last 30 years, has led every other industry out of downturns. And that's going to happen here as well. But it's not traditional marketing. A lot of the tools that have fed the 9,932 companies in MarTech are going away. As Apple and Google, Apple first moved and Google is kind of halfway through the transition. Those two companies own 99% of mobile share and they own 86% of desktop browsing share. So privacy and you as a product on the internet begins and ends with those two companies. When they fully enact cookies, now MarTech changes to more of a partnership element and working with others to attack those early 28 moments. In a subscription, it's only the first 30 days. The point of sale isn't everything anymore. It's only the first 30 days. Getting the customer to the dance, getting them on the dance floor, and then all the fun starts. And so how are you going to market to, through, and with to your customers, through your partners, to make sure that you're driving adoption? To make sure you're driving integrations and stickiness, upsell, cross-sell, enrichment, every 30 days forever. In these types of models, whether you're an air conditioning company, a car company, or a tech company, the industry, the Wall Street's going to ask you for 108% retention, meaning for every customer you lose, you're going to have to double up a current customer. So this is the future. And so marketing isn't a pre-sale activity anymore. You're always marketing. And your customer base is a customer for life. The economics are different. The phases are different. The cycles are different. The psychology is different. The behavior is different. The journey itself is completely different in a subscription consumption model. And it probably anchors around that point of sale, which will happen through a digital marketplace.
And how would you say that the journey is... In what particular ways would you say that the journey is different for every customer?
Well, the journey, I mean, obviously every customer takes a different route. The last time you bought a car, I can only guess at your 28 moments, but I probably guess that you watched some YouTube videos, you read a magazine, you probably talked to your neighbors, you went to social media. I mean, I can guess at the events you took that got you from 365 kinds of cars and 62 local dealerships of different brands and landed you at a certain place. I can guess pretty well where you went and how you got there. You configured the car, you colored it, you put the rims on it you wanted, you downloaded the invoice price, you downloaded the back-end rebates. You were so smart entering that dealership. The same goes for every considered purchase. For every mattress you buy, for every car you buy, for every piece of software or hardware technology you buy, anything considered, you're going to go through these moments. We know more about these moments than ever before, but we know most of these moments, almost all of them, are done by others. And those others need to be recruited and onboarded, and we need to nurture them so that there's some sort of co-innovation or value creation or network effects that we can both take advantage of, 1 + 1 = 3, that we can both go at it together.
And so would you agree then, speaking of traditional marketing, would you agree that even in the current economic environment, the digital transformation of marketing is far from over, and that it continues to be one of the most effective tools available to businesses worldwide for acquiring and retaining customers?
Yeah, well, I think there's a number set of tools. Obviously, the MarTech tools are growing. You've watched that MarTech stack almost reach 10,000 this year. For the next decade, we're going to continue to refine ourselves around this new buyer. In 4 years, the majority buyer in every considered purchase industry will be a millennial. So there is different psychology, different behaviors that we have to not only monitor, measure, and manage, but we have to execute. And the fact of the matter is, this is now kind of the decade of the ecosystem where we have to manage and measure and monitor and manage others to do that. And work with. So marketing isn't as much as a departmental, closed-in, hermetically sealed environment as it once was. And partnerships now aren't just, you know, getting out to social media. It's not getting out to some of the, you know, marketing influencers. It's truly a partnership game where it's not a list. It's not an email blast. It's not a social campaign. It's not search engine optimization as much as it is looking at all of these other partners in the game. So it will be running parallel with many of the other things. And like I said, that's before the point of sale, getting the customer to the dance, getting them on the dance floor and keeping them dancing all night long will become just as much as marketing KPIs as anything else. How you market to, through, and with your technology integration partners is going to be key. You know, I talked about cars. They're selling computers on wheels now. Like, these aren't cars. That technology, the air conditioning, is basically a computer wrapped around a fan and condenser that's, you know, plugged into the side of your house. Every company in every industry is becoming a tech company. The tech industry is based on an integration first, API first environment. So if I'm a marketing person and I work for Mercedes-Benz, 79% of car buyers now will not buy a car unless it has Apple CarPlay. And if you saw a month ago, Apple CarPlay 2. So it doesn't matter what engine and what design and what beautiful brand we built over 100 years. If we don't have a certain integration partner, they're going to walk across the street and buy a BMW. This is the new world. And we are integration first buyers. Where you look in the MarTech stack, integrations have become the number one thing people need above cost and support and all the other things. And so as a marketer, I got to think through these technology integrations. And if Apple would say something nice about Mercedes-Benz, that would go a long way to connect those buyers, at least 4/5 of them, to say, not only do I want CarPlay, but I need that inside a beautiful leather-wrapped cabin.
And so what, in your opinion, would be the possible dangers of this kind of integration of tech into everything? Any possible...
The danger is your partner becomes more powerful than you do. I've got 100 years building really nice cars, and then all of a sudden, whatever radio it has becomes more important than the car. So the integration is that the big tech companies, the big five, become more and more powerful and maybe take over the brand. Or in some cases, if you're an Amazon, for example, they might acquire a competitor or you and go directly and compete with you. And that's what can happen in integrations as well. So this is a world where, you know, these big five tech companies are all thinking about rolling out their own car brands. So while it's your radio inside your Mercedes today, Mercedes may be facing off against a very popular and rich competitor, you know, a few years from now.
And so what's the answer to this perceived monopolization of everything? Is there a way, because it's not yet started, is there a way it can be channeled towards something that is not as dangerous as it seems with monopolization?
Well, I mean, the answer today is not to go in your own cocoon and convince customers that this isn't the right thing for 79% of you. The answer today is to be the best implementation of CarPlay. And it's connected into so many places that you're putting so much engineering into it that you actually have, for 79% of buyers, you have the best implementation connected to the nicest looking car with the best other technology in it, that it just makes sense that when you buy your iPhone, for example, all of a sudden there's a little app in there allowing you to subscribe to your new car. So, I mean, it is deeper integrations and it's meeting that customer for where they want to buy and providing a frictionless environment to them. And, you know, understand that these trends are, you know, not future looking trends. They're absolutely underway and getting out in front of them.
Okay, so I have one last question. It's more personal and it's for you, which is, what would you be doing if not this in your life in general?
If I wasn't doing this, I would probably be on a sailboat circumnavigating the earth.
Oh, wow. Wait, what is circumnavigation? Just going around or?
Spinning around the world, yep.
Okay, literally. Okay, well, thanks everyone for joining us for this month's episode of Outgrow's Market of the Month. That was Jay McBain, who is the chief analyst at Canalys. Thanks for joining us, Jay.
Thanks for having me.
Check out their website for more details, and we'll see you once again next month with another Marketer of the Month.